It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, here we go. 4 o'clock hour. Steve Cofield, Willie Ramirez. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyer. 766-1400 is the number. Northern Nevada is in for this hour, so you can call from Northern Nevada office for Battleborn in Reno, Sparks area. 775-766-1400. So we got a couple guys sitting in with us today. Paul Gutierrez, Raiders Insiders, coming up at 5 o'clock. Ryan Hoag, who's gotten a lot of time over on Raider Nation Radio 920. He played in the NFL as well. He's up with Cofield and Willie. What's going on?
Hey, you know, living the dream.
All right.
Another day.
Right?
Beautiful day.
Part of the dream for a sports talk radio host is lots of juicy topics. And I'm telling you, this would be a time of year where I used to look at the NFL and be like, you know what? I'm glad you're gone. Now we're going to do some other stuff. But Roger Goodell was like, no. No? You're going to talk NFL. And this week is kind of incredible. I never thought this was a big deal in the past because I guess it wasn't presented like that, you know, hour by hour releases and then a big release yesterday. The NFL schedule release has become nuts. In the middle of May, we're talking NFL.
It's unbelievable. I just got back from the draft as well. And you want to talk about, yeah, the NFL is made it a 365-day, you know, event. Every single day, it seems like there's something to be talking about. There's a new topic for fans to, you know, get around a water cooler and talk about. This time, the draft. And it seems like the last few years, you can feel kind of the energy towards that. But this year, they kind of set a new stand. Like, it was on a different level where they were like, hey, we're gonna make this as big a deal. And, you know, people were talking about the last two weeks.
So we're going to hit this in about 5 minutes. And then hit it multiple times during this hour. Ryan Hoag's with us. The schedule release. But I want to get to something that's near and dear to Willie's heart.
Okay.
And that is flag football.
Mm. Yes.
Because we're seeing the NFL's behind it, no doubt. We talked to our friend Daniel McCartan, who coaches a high school flag football team in the New Jersey, New York area. We saw, what was the young lady's name who was heavily featured during the Super Bowl as a flag
Kilolo
football star?
Westerlin.
Say it one more time.
Kilolo, her name's Kiana. She goes by Lolo. Kilolo Westerlin. She goes to Liberty High School.
Attendance at flag football games here is
out of the world. Well, high school flag football, you're getting the parents and the student body, and it could get crowded as you get into toward the playoff. But the tournaments with their club teams are ridiculous. I'm talking like AAU, like little league, like or club baseball, like when you or for you 7-on-7. I don't know if they had 7-on-7 when you were.
I'm a little too old. For
yeah,
that.
So okay, that's what but you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Okay, so 7-on-7 for the boys has now transitioned to where you have 7-on-7 or you have 5-on-5 flag. And I went to a tournament at Palo Verde High School, and the parking lot's packed. They got the tents up with the vendors there, and they're every single weekend. They're traveling all over the place, and it's phenomenal.
We're cut from the same cloth, Willie, because I'm not sitting here right now without flag football. My freshman year, I didn't play football growing up. I played every other sport. Played one year of football in my life until my sophomore year of college. But my freshman year, I was at Wake Forest, and, you know, ACC, Southern, they love their sports. So I played intramural flag football. I took a team to the Southeast Regional Tournament. We went down and played at against University of Florida, all these teams, and it ignited my love for the game of football. I ended up transferring that next year and played football because of it. Had that experience not happened for me, I wouldn't. But to your point, like, there are people that are unbelievably talented in it, but also just gaga as far as fans. Like, it is such a fun sport to watch, to play, and I attribute my love for the game because of my experience playing flag football at Wake Forest.
I can't remember the year it was. It was maybe 2015 or 16, but it was just called the Clark County School District Championship. It was somewhat of an intramural, and the high schools implemented it, some of them, and Arborview High School in Boulder City went undefeated to the semifinals, played Green Valley and Cimarron in the semis, and everyone expected Arbor to play Boulder. Both got upset. The championship was at Arbor. Cimarron wins the first ever city championship. I covered it. That particular year, there were high schools that were struggling to make full varsity rosters. The following year, they had floods of tryouts. By the third year, they had freshman, JV, and varsity teams. Now, every school, and we're talking 30, 40, you know, however many high schools at every class, it's And what I watched when Arborview, as one of the best teams when they first started it, their rivals at the time were Desert Oasis and Shadow. And we're talking about having to separate the girls after certain plays. These girls do not mess around.
Intensity, competitiveness, yeah.
Brutal. And now we're going to see. I've been knowing, you know, obviously what Lolo's capable of. She was in one of my sports leadership classes a couple of years ago, in which I guest speak. So I've known about her and her spot with Nationals and whatnot. After that commercial with the Super Bowl, at halftime of this past Super Bowl, there's no doubt that she will be sort of groomed and set up to be the face of Team USA for 2028 in the LA Games.
And you look at the NFL and just football in general, there is really, I mean, yes, there's Pop Warner, but as far as like a grassroots campaign that's somewhat recent, there isn't really anything that generates that kind of excitement, right? You look at like club soccer or club basketball in Europe and in other countries, right? That's really like, you know, from a young age, you're able to play that, and that's why they have some of the best athletes at those particular sports. The NFL has tinkered and tried NFL Europe, which I played in, UFL, USFL. Like, those leagues just don't work, right? I think flag football is kind of where we're headed.
Well, let me ask you this. As a former professional football player, you think back over the years, when do we get excited about – we get excited when – the United States women's soccer team is going to play in the World Cup or the Olympics. We've gotten excited with over the past however many years. If you're not a let me clarify. If you're not a regular everyday fan of soccer, that's when you get excited. If you're not an everyday regular fan of basketball, you get excited when the women play in the Olympics or the FIBA World Cup, right? That's when you now all of a sudden flag football and with that commercial, things are catching on and we're seeing other states sanction it. Hawaii just jumped on board. Do you think that the common sports fan that gets fed up with, let's say, the NBA, they don't show up till the fourth quarter, or their favorite NFL team, they're million-dollar athletes, they're spoiled, they're this, when you're looking at women who don't get paid a lot of money outside of their professionally, maybe for their endorsements, they really look like they're playing for the passion and the love of the game, and people are coming to appreciate their passion.
True amateur sports, yeah. Right? And you saw the Caitlin Clark effect and how, you know, that ignited, you know, so many people wanting to play and wanting to watch, myself included, you know, University of Iowa 2 years ago. So to your point, yes, I think that is the beauty, the rawness of just the true fan that just wants to watch people playing for the love of the game. I played at Division III level, right? No scholarships. I was playing against like a math nerd and a physics major, right? And these guys had zero interest in playing anything beyond college, and we were playing for the love of the game and for the brotherhood.
Now, for audience, I don't think men's flag football will sniff anything compared to tackle football. And my fear is that because of lawsuits and some of the fear that Goodell has shown, I don't want flag football to replace regular football down the road. Now, I'm not the one going out there cracking skulls, but I don't want that to happen. I don't think it'll happen. I have a respect for flag football, so I don't want to sound like I don't. And this is where my respect comes in. So the NFL is behind this. We mentioned, you know, putting money towards the women and putting money into flag football. They're pushing the Olympic thing. I don't want the NFL, in terms of players, to be any part of the Olympics. I want guys who play flag football. And that is a different kind of football. I want those guys to rep the United States. That's our team. But now there's a move on here, potentially, to let NFL players in flag football in 2028. And I get it. They want to grow the sport, but screw that.
Are you talking just football, though? Like, so basketball, should we not
allow? No. The freaking cart and the horse, everything's out of the barn. It's too late. I go back. I still think we should have just had college players. We panicked because we had one bad run, bad coach, bad roster selection. No, but football, at least for the first couple of Olympic competitions.
Well, it's only
if we lose, we lose. Well,
what's the word?
And that's experimental.
Experimental.
So, and that's the problem here. I get it. That if they put the NFL players in, the Olympics are going to be blown away with the numbers they get. But can we do it where it's a worldwide competition? Let the other countries actually compete with us. Don't have NFL players, and we just use flag football Americans.
What? It's a catch-22 for me because my first thought went to Robert Edwards, if you remember him. Yeah. In the Pro Bowl, they used to do flag football but in sand, and he blew out his knee and never played again.
I wasn't even thinking about the risk because that's another angle. I'm not letting my guy play.
My worst injury I ever had, I got cut from Jacksonville Jaguars, and I was playing at the University of Minnesota flag football, ACL, MCL, LCL meniscus playing flag football. With that being said, from a fan perspective, I think it would be so fun because the way they want to do it is you can only have one professional or one NFL player on your team. So
okay.
I think and the team that has Lamar Jackson wins, right? And because if you have an athletic quarterback that can throw the ball and just out-athlete you, you're gonna win. But
per country.
I think it would be fascinating if you set those, specific standards of, okay, well, we're going to even up because, obviously a team of Tyreek and Lamar, that's probably going to be a little, unfair. But from a fan perspective, if I see my favorite player back in the day, Michael Vick or Deion playing in flag football, that would be so fun.
Can I read what it says, though?
Yeah.
The resolution says, quote, participation by NFL players in flag football during the 2028 Summer Olympics. And I get it. They say, we'll support such growth, advance several league interests, blah, 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 blah. That says players. That's not one player. Now, you're right. That might have been a report that you read, and I'm reading something different. But I don't want a whole team of NFL players.
No.
And I'll go over the top on this one. I don't think we'd win.
Well, it is
with
a different
NFL
game.
Players? Exactly.
It is a different game. And if these guys come in thinking they don't have to practice, they're absolutely. Because it's all about pitching and knowing the time. It's almost like a hybrid rugby game. But they have all these. The NFL hopes to see the process work. The NFLPA came in and said, they have to, if they're under NFL contract, a limit of one NFL player per team. You can have a designated international player
exactly
for his home country. Right. There's league-wide insurance policies. There's a salary cap. I love to ski and snowboard. I remember when I signed NFL contract, that wasn't an option in the offseason. So right. To your point,
honestly, who's going to win? So the NFL wants players. The NFLPA is doing what it's supposed to do, protect it. One player. Who do you think is going to win?
No. Wait, let's clarify real quick. The NFLPA, what they're saying is there's one player per team.
Per NFL team.
Okay. But if you have six different countrymen from the Vikings, all six could play for their country. So now you have one for the United States. Well, the Dallas Cowboys could have one for the United States. The Las Vegas Raiders could have one for the United States. So it's one player from each team is eligible to try out for U.S. One player from each team. If you're from, what was the guy that we had? Jakob Johnson, right?
So he's on Germany.
Germany, right. So one player representing the Raiders for every country. If you got 10 countrymen, all 10 get to go try out, but you can't have two Raiders try out for United States.
By the way, Jakob Johnson for Germany would be cool. What role would he have in flag football? He's 6'3", 245 as a fullback. Right?
Yeah, he's maybe a snapper.
Or blocker.
He's a lineman, yeah.
He'd be a blocker.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You said my point was about experimental, and you were like, I get it. They'd want it to. Hey, we are in an NIL era in which the college players are just as big. They could go without the NFL players. They could ban this because it's experimental. So they can't ride the dream team wave or the women's basketball. I don't mind the idea of college players.
So, Steve, you're not watching it if there's NFL players.
I will be unhappy. We'll address it on the other side.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
4 o'clock hour. We got a special guest today with Ryan Hogue sitting in, former NFL player. You hear him a lot over on Raider Nation Radio 920. Of all the contributors we've had on the show and host, Ryan is the
best looking,
fastest because of your track. That's actually not factual. We have someone who's faster.
I was 3-time All-American in track. That doesn't – no? Who's?
I mean, that's pretty good.
Who's fast?
That's pretty good. What was your best in the 100 meter?
10-5, 1.
Okay. We actually have – now he's coaching a lot more football. We have Stanford Rout on the show.
Oh,
Stanford ran a 10-3-7.
He was fast, yeah.
So I was setting you up.
I think he's – was he Viking? Stanford Rout?
He's a former Raider.
Raider.
For a good amount of time. Yeah. And
he was a 4-3 guy coming out, too.
He was ridiculous. Corner. Yeah. So, no, like you're no, he's you are top of the heap. I was like, I got to set him up.
Ryan, you don't understand. This is a big thing for Steve to talk about this for some reason, because years ago, before I became part of the company, I'll never forget, he had this thing. I don't remember why, but there was this challenge or something about one of the – He guest hosts on all the shows, Adam Candy, because he's a referee. So so running up and down, I don't remember the situation. Why you brought this up or why who's fast?
That wasn't me.
Was this show.
Here's the thing on this.
But
show.
I challenged and I was like, I'll take Adam on in the 40. Yeah. This was before meniscus surgery and when I wasn't in my 50s. But that nobody ever took the challenge up.
You're right.
Nobody set the race up.
Yeah, we don't do anything here.
No, of course not.
We make bets.
We were supposed to have a flag football team. Who was that with?
Flag football team? What are you, nuts?
Caleb Herring was going to be the quarterback.
No one's doing anything here. We're going to sign releases.
We just talked flag football. We just talked about it.
Well, we're not going to do it.
We should.
Just talk about it.
We should have a media league. They have softball, we should have a media league football.
That's the extent of the athleticism.
Yeah, I can see it. You bowl so you could drink beer and eat nachos with cheese or pretzels.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And the drunker I get, the better I bowl.
Sure.
Flag football, you're asking me the question because here's the story. The NFL is lobbying for NFL players to be in the Olympics in flag football. Mm. We're kind of all over the place on how many players could be in. I get the concept of the NFL. Spread a bunch of NFL players around Team USA and the international countries and keep this thing going, moving forward, get the momentum. You could also let real flag football players just play and bribe the Olympics, right? And I'm sure they'd be like, oh, bribe. Okay, that's normal business. Like, you can just pay to keep it going.
Sure,
like, you don't have to.
IOC
does it
better.
There's a lot to it, and I don't want to go on and on forever. Ryan, you're asking me, will I watch it if there's NFL players in it? Of course I will. Okay. Of course I will.
Right.
And you know what I will say? There are times I root against USA. I might root against USA. I might root for, I don't know. I have to look back at the results of the flag football the last time around, and I could swear Mexico had a good team, and one of the Asian countries had a really good team. And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
That happens all the time with Kofa. Yeah. He was rooting for the Australian girl in the breakdance competition.
I don't know about that. No, that would be the ultimate underdog. That was absurd.
I might have been the only one that all three of you know that morning, the very first day of the competition, I was literally live tweeting every competitor and what they were doing, and if you were watching the football, going, I can't believe they just blew that cover too. They had a man wide open in the slot bubble. I'm sitting there breaking down, move my boot. Oh, there was an up rock, and he went into it 1990.
He comes on the air doing that. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry, man. All right, so the NFL schedule comes out. Let's talk about some quirks. It is weird, very backloaded with Washington and Philly.
Yeah, and there's actually two situations like that. Bucks and Panthers also play week 16 and week 18.
Yeah.
Maybe not as relevant, because I really think that both Washington and Philly have a great chance. I mean, I think you guys would agree, of making the playoffs. And wouldn't it be fascinating if they played each other week 16, week 18, and then the first round of the playoffs? Three times in 4 weeks. I mean, that alone caused me to be like, why? Like, if you're going to have that, because there's, like, five instances the NFL is doing this year, like, and there's two, obviously, at the end of the season. Like, if you're going to do it earlier in the season to prevent that opportunity to play back-to-back weeks, three times in four, it's never happened before, right?
I guess positive is they could be competing for the division, so have them play pretty close. Negative is I think everything is done for TV in this. And, the Eagles' schedule is really freaking tough. You won the Super Bowl with it. Their schedule's really tough. Okay, Minnesota. So you got experience with the Vikings.
Yep.
I don't know how this works. Like, if I were Ziggy Wolf, I might actually step up for my players. And now we're not going to Europe twice. And now it turns out they're going once. And it's back-to-back weeks. But it's the first time it's ever happened. It's weird.
And playing it's not like they're going back-to-back in London. They're going from Ireland to London. Undefeated in London, in 4-0 in the past, which I don't think obviously plays a role. But, I think the way they massaged it to make it like justifiable is they're not taking any home games away, right? So both of them are considered away games, so they're still getting 8 home games this year for the regular season. And then I would argue that both of those away games that traditionally are neutral games, I think they're going to be Vikings fans, because if I'm a diehard Viking fan, I'm going out to Ireland for that first game. I'm staying in town. I'm going to go down and and watch my team play in London as well. I think you're going to have a massive disparity of fans, even though the Steelers travel well and the Browns, depending on the season, they travel well. I think you're going to have a pro-Viking stadium for both of those games, meaning now you've turned 8 home games into 10 home games.
And so we know that there's like a formula, right? And there's this first-place team plays this team of this division. But then there's also NFC North will play the AFC South. From week 3 to week 4 to week 5, they play 3 straight AFC North teams. So they're at home against the Bengals, then they go to Pittsburgh, then they go to Cleveland. Do you, as a football player, you like the fact that you're knocking out that AFC division that you're having to play back-to-back-to-back, or would you rather see it spread out?
Well, from a player perspective, I'd rather see it spread out because then I have a little more film like for common opponents, right? Because if you're playing them that early in the season, they probably haven't played each other, so you can't reference, okay, when we played against Pittsburgh, you know, they did this against Cover 2, and now we're playing Cincinnati, and look at how they attacked Cincinnati, you know, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. But other than that, I could care less if I'm playing, you know, my NFC North people right away, or if I'm playing the division that we're facing, the NFC or the AFC South or wherever it is, that to me, again, as a player, I'm just thinking about the next game and what I can do to help me as far as a film prep. And when I've seen teams play against each other that we've played, that's the only advantage I have. Other than that, it's really nothing.
This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyer. 766-1400 is the number. Ryan Hogue is sitting in with Willie and Cofield on this Thursday. I want to talk some NBA because I think these playoffs are tremendous. But I'm also open to both ends of the spectrum. I'm open to a league that is balanced and wild and unpredictable, and I'm also open to an era of dominance with one or two or three really good teams. We may be in an era of openness here, especially because the champ, the Celtics, may be in trouble. But, you know, again, let me kind of touche myself on this one. Are the Celtics done? Did you watch last night? Did you see 22 threes go in? You see the rally behind, you know, the injury? Is that a one-game bump? Could that be the rest of the series?
Well, I think it comes down to Porzingis and this mysterious illness that he's been dealing with. I think if he can come back healthy, that is like a bonus player because they've been playing essentially without him. He's had spot minutes here and there and been impactful in those minutes. But, you know, when he's playing 9 minutes a game, he should be playing 30, especially with Tatum out. It is fun to see guys like Brown step in and Derek White and be like, hey, this is, you know, we're not going to just stand around and watch him go solo ball now and Jason Tatum. Now it's my turn to show out. And ultimately, the three-point shot is the ultimate negator for any, right? I mean, it's an equalizer for any team, and you make 22, just like Minnesota's done in the playoffs as well. Like you're hard to beat.
Yeah, the problem that I have is I think that you're running on adrenaline and you're running on emotion and you're trying to play for your wounded soldier there in Boston, and I get it. But the comeback game, and hey, it's the playoffs, and every game's going to be sold out, especially when you're talking about the Mecca. But it's Friday night in Manhattan, in Madison Square Garden, with a chance to knock off your arch rivals. I do think it's going to be very hard to do what you did from the three-point line in New York on a Friday night. For me, from a handicapping standpoint, it's one of the very first, it's one of those non-court intangibles I take into consideration that it's the day of the week. Hey, you could, you know, you're going to have every kind of fan that's going to go out there because they don't have to get up in the morning for the most part, right? So I think they're in trouble tomorrow.
Okay. So then the Knicks are the best team in the East or going to the finals?
No.
Okay.
Now, I will say in the Knicks-Celtics game, they have the best player, Jalen Brunson. They have the best defender, Josh Hart. And they have the biggest wild card in Cat. Right? I think, you know, those three, full stop, like them versus Boston, you know, advantage to me goes to the Knicks. And again, unless they can shoot 22 and make 22 threes again, and then you go to game 7 in Boston, and then I would think the Boston would take it if it goes to game 7. But
a lot of pressure on your Friday night dream spot. A lot of pressure.
No, well, I'm going back to your comment about the best team in the East. I'm going to remind everybody the very first NBA in-season tournament, one of the best teams playing at that time, even though they lost to the Lakers here in Vegas, was the Pacers. Everybody was gaga over Halliburton. And then they sort of I think they got caught up with their own headlines, and they sort of tripped over their feet a little bit, stumbled in, and then bowed out. I think they came in to this postseason with a chip on their shoulder because they're every bit as good, if not better, with a little more experience as they were last year when they made it to the in-season tournament final. So I'm intrigued to see who – I don't care who comes out of it, Boston or New York. Of course I do, actually, because if you're not from Boston, you should always root against the Beantown boys. But I think the Pacers are a tough matchup.
Really, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Pacers are the best team in the East. I think they could absolutely win the NBA championship. I mean, they have depth at the guard. They have a rim protector. And they have 3-and-D guys. Naismith is the epitome of a 3-and-D. And then the ultimate wild card again, Halliburton. I think he's playing, you know, effortless basketball. And he's, you know, his confidence is through the roof.
On the way back, a little more on the NBA. Because while I said I'm open to balance, wildness, an Indianapolis OKC final, I mean, I think this is what Silver was kind of hoping for, but when TV people were looking at it, they're like, my God, we're in trouble.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Rolling into the second half of this hour, our Reno, Northern Nevada hour. Of course, we're here in Vegas. Thank you, you guys, for our loyal listeners. Ryan Hogue is sitting in, Willie Cofield. I want to mention one more thing about where the NBA is right now, because we got six teams left. So we could have, you know, unless the Celtics pull off a, you know, comeback for the ages, we're going to have some teams. Denver is a defending champion, but right now they're in trouble. We're going to have some teams that haven't been in it. New York is a massive market. But you got Celtics, Pacers, Nuggets, OKC, and Minnesota. So we could have something pretty wild here. And we chronicled a lot during the season, this back and forth between ESPN and the guys on TNT, Shaq and Barkley, and they were like, you know, all you guys talk about is this team and this team. And it was like, it made no sense. Well, guess what? Everyone's going to now they're all going to be put on the friggin' griddle. Because if it's Indy and OKC, because a bunch of them were like, we need to talk about them and not the Lakers and GS. Okay, well, now you got your wish. So I made a list here.
I like this.
Who's going to be the least prepared to talk about the OKC Indianapolis finals matchup if it happens? Stephen A. Charles Barkley. Shanae Agumake, who I put in for you, or Bill Simmons. These are all NBA people. Who's going to have the toughest time and have to basically just redirect, and maybe the whole finals we'll talk about Cooper Flagg being white. It's gonna be hot take central.
I already got my answer. We'll go, but Ryan's our guest host.
Who do you want?
It would be number five, all the above. But the answer is always Stephen A. Because Stephen A. is going to be the loudest, and it's not going to make any sense, right? He's going to just go on and on and on about something, and he'll use, you know, a couple big words here and there. But Stephen A. is good at what he does, but he also, when it comes to certain things like specifics, sports specific. When it's not a major market team or a major player or Michael Jordan related, then it's going to be
him. I think he's brilliant with hot takes, but and I don't think he really believes that hardcore basketball talk is what sells. But what he's going to need is Tyrese Halliburton or SGA to like start a fight with him. Like it's going to have to be one of those things, and he'll have to turn it personal, because otherwise I don't know what Barkley's going to talk about. He doesn't know any of these guys.
I don't listen to Bill Simmons a lot, but I'm not sure how much. I might lean toward him. But here's the thing. Only because that's who I'm going with. But here's what I'm going to say without a list. Mm-hmm. Let's say this is the most unexpected NBA matchup, right? And all of a sudden you got to do a quick study and watch game film. Who is the one basketball analyst that you would want to listen to once – So, the NBA Finals is decided on a Sunday night, and Game 1 is on a Thursday. They got 3 days. I know the basketball analyst I want to listen to first and foremost on this on any matchup.
Who is it?
Andrea Carter. Hands down. I think she's phenomenal in her breakdowns of game film, of systems, schematics. I think she's a fantastic basketball analyst, men or women. And I would take her over anybody.
Yeah, she didn't play in the NBA, though.
Neither did Shanae Agumake, but you put her on the list.
By the way, when are you going to be an analyst for WNBA? When do we get a guy in the WNBA panel?
Oh, they got Ryan Rucco.
Come on. He's a little nerd who didn't play basketball.
You bet! He likes to
He's a play-by-play guy. Doesn't count. I'm obviously being facetious. I don't care if Andrea played in the NBA or not.
No, I know. We've talked about it. But I'm a very big Andrea Carter fan.
She's great.
And I think she's – I just think when she's on Final Four, when she does WNBA, I think she could do NBA. I think she could study film. And I think she could – they could fill her in last minute. She could study film in an hour and be ready to step on the dais in the NBA. She's that good.
On Stephen A., I actually think he has it right. I don't think most fans care about hardcore breakdown. I think there's a niche. I mean, I like watching it, but I also understand there's a bigger audience. So we will rip them. We'll complain a little bit, but they're probably playing the cards the right way. But it is the coverage of it is going to be completely fascinating. We know there's going to be a whole segment of guys who look like me, a little bit older, who are going to be like, ratings, 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 NBA's dying. Like, stop. It's not. You know, and this is, you get these transition periods where you have to develop new stars. And the guy I didn't even mention is Anthony Edwards. If Minnesota makes it, I think a lot of people are going to be like, Minnesota, and you're going to watch this guy go out and potentially score 34 points a game. And by the way, we got a break here, but Randall, no one gives
Julius Randall is playing unbelievable.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Rolling on Cofield and Company. All right, back to the NFL schedule release. Before we get to the rest of the league, we haven't really talked about the Raiders yet. We're going to get to a lot of Raiders, by the way. Next hour with Paul Gutierrez from Raiders.com. Ryan Hoag's with us.
That's me.
Raiders schedule early, I think, is pretty manageable. What do you think?
I think it's going to tell a lot about the season, and that's cliche, sure. But, you know, when it comes to the first game, you're looking at Patriots. I think Patriots are, along with the Bears, going to be one of the biggest movers in terms of comparable wins from last year to this year. I think they're going to be at least 500, or at least an 8-win team, I should say. I really like what they did from a coaching standpoint, and then getting Stephon Diggs, shoring up their offensive line. Obviously, Drake May, second-year quarterback. And really, you know, you look at the Raiders' schedule as a whole, it's a lot of second-year quarterbacks. So we'll see if it's the sophomore slump, because C.J. Stroud was like the it thing going into last year, and he had the proverbial sophomore slump. Second game, then Chargers. Chargers are coming off a mini bye because they're going to be playing Brazil, the Chiefs. I would think the Chiefs are going to be favored and probably win that game because, you know, I mean, Chiefs lost the opening game last year against the Lions, I think, right? And I don't think they're going to lose two openers back-to-back years. So Chargers are coming Monday Night Football, home opener. Yes, the excitement's going to be there for the Raiders, but if the Chargers are coming off a division loss with a mini bye on Monday Night Football, I have a hard time thinking they're going to start the season 0-2. So that's going to be a really hard game. Obviously, at Commanders, Jaden Daniels, he's probably my favorite player right now in the NFL to watch. And they're really in a win now with a quarterback of the future mode, right? And that's what you want to get to in the NFL. You want to have a quarterback of the future, but with guys that are ready to win now in some of their offseason moves. Tunsil at left tackle. They got Debo Samuel. So I really like what they did in the offseason. That's going to be really hard. And then Bears, I already mentioned them. I think along with the Patriots, they're going to be one of those teams where, you know, you love what they did from a coaching standpoint, getting Ben Johnson, probably the most offensively creative mind in the league. And Caleb Williams, you know, I mean, that's obviously the ultimate wild card, and we'll see how he responds to a rough rookie year, but also didn't have anybody blocking for him. So,
yeah, I tried to pinpoint what maybe are the five most important games for the Raiders, and two of my five are in the first 4 weeks. That's the opener at New England, because I think it sets the tone. And it's New England, let's face it, right? And then there's the Josh McDaniel, factor in terms of him being back with the Patriots. And then you have that extra day off because you're coming home to play Monday Night Football against the Chargers. And then you turn around and go back to the East Coast, and you're playing, you know, what a lot of people deem to be that upstart team that they sort of fell in love with. I think you became, you know, fan darlings, if you will, the Washington Commanders. But my two of the the two of the five important games were the Patriots in week one and the Bears in week four. Because I always look at it like this. When do we really start talking about, is it panic time? Is it? I love when people, media, fans go nuts after the first 3 weeks of the season. If a team is 1-2 and 0-3, oh my God, get rid of this, bench this dude, blah, 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 blah. And in reality, we've seen teams start off 1-4, 1-5 and come back and make runs. But in reality, it does sort of have that stigma the first three games. So depending on where the Raiders are, you can make an argument that if they're 3-0, 1-2, 2-1, that fourth game is important in some perspective, right? Plus, if I'm not mistaken, Pete Carroll was considered, before Chicago and Vegas hired their new coaches, both were considered for both positions. So there's sort of that battle going there too. The one thing I noticed interesting about the Raiders, they don't have their first back-to-back of anything, meaning homestand or road, until week 11. They alternate. Away, home, away, home, away, home. That bye throwing in, not until week 11 and 12 do they have their first two back-to-back home games, and then week 14 road games back-to-back. I just kind of found that odd.
I love their bye week. I love it in the middle of the
right
season,
in the middle.
Right?
Right
in the
perfect.
Middle.
I think it's perfect.
I will say their only Thursday game of the year at Broncos, and I think Denver is probably the hardest place to play on a short week, right? You're coming off a game against Jacksonville, right? And then you got a couple days rest, and then you got to go to Mile High Stadium where, you know, conditioning's an issue. Thursday games suck in general. Dallas is playing four of them this year. I can't believe that, right? I mean, it on your body, like as a receiver, it was hard for me to fully recover by a Thursday, right? I can't imagine like these offensive and defensive linemen, right, coming off, and now you're in thin air where you're going to need oxygen. That is probably like that shouldn't even be allowed to play in Denver on a short week on a Thursday night. Like that's really, really tough. But I do like the home away schedule for the Raiders. Unlike like Baltimore, they have three home games, then three away games, then three home games. So it's interesting what the NFL did with different teams.
Week one schedule, when you guys look through this, was there a game or two that really interested you? Maybe not what everyone would think. Like obviously Chiefs and Chargers in Brazil is going to be a neat game. I want to see what the Niners are this year. And they should be healthy, but they did have to shed a lot of defensive payroll. They moved on Deebo Samuel, which I think is really smart. And they're in Seattle. And what are the Seahawks now with Darnold?
I think Sam Darnold was a microcosm of the Vikings having a lot of talent and Kevin O'Connell being a badass coach. Mm-hmm. I think Kevin O'Connell is unbelievable. I've met him. I know him. And everybody around Winter Park, your old stomping grounds, right? Eden Prairie, Minnesota. They love Kevin O'Connell and just the confidence he instills in quarterbacks. That's not to take away anything from Sam Darnold. I think he's a fine quarterback. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback by any stretch of the imagination. And I think it's a step down from where they were with Geno Smith.
My game's going to be, obviously, it's going to be my Baltimore Ravens at the Buffalo Bills Sunday Night Football. So I'm intrigued by that. But also,
by the way, is this official?
No.
Come on, just make the switch. Why are you hemming and hawing? He's been a Cowboys fan his whole life.
Wow.
They come on. They're going on 30 years now. I'm making the NFC Championship game. Jerry's going to hand it down to Stevie. It's going to be the same thing.
Okay, look,
you're doomed.
Look, Jets guy, zip it.
You're doomed.
Steelers at the Jets. Are we going to? Is A-Rod going to sign? Is this going to be a little bit of a revenge game? What are we doing?
Let me build on this one.
Oh, okay.
So we were talking about what game. We can do Survivor here in a second. But early NFL lines, what stands out? So you're right. The Steelers are a 2.5-point favorite against the Jets. And I put together a money line parlay with dogs. So my money line parlay is going to be Jets plus 135 at home against the Steelers.
Okay.
Browns plus 200 at home against the Bengals.
I love that.
That Ravens on the road against the Bills. They're all dogs. Now, my rationale on the Jets-Steelers, I like 95% believe Aaron Rodgers has a handshake deal with the Steelers. But it's Aaron Rodgers. I don't know what the hell he's going to do. So I'm banking on that line being awful when A-Rodge in like a month drags it out and he's like, no, I'm out. Not playing. Like, okay.
Well, why don't you hand me that money and I'll burn it, because that's how much I believe in that parlay. I think the Steelers' defense, once again, is going to be one of the best. They got Darius Slay to go on the opposite of Joey Porter Jr., and they drafted a big guy up front. I can't remember his name, but D-tackle. They're going to be unbelievable on the defensive side of the football. And then I look at the Jets. Justin Fields does nothing for me. He does not cause any type of emotion other than he's not a franchise quarterback or even a starting quarterback in my mind. Yes, he's going to have the revenge angle, but I think Mike Tomlin's going to know how to defend him after seeing him in practice every day.
Will he? Because I'll tell you, I will counter with it. I'm not a Jets homer at all. Willie can tell you this.
Yeah, he's not.
Art Smith was terrible for Justin Fields.
Yes.
Never used his skill set.
What if
the Jets actually use his skill set and he's out on the move a lot? There's a lot of design runs, not two. There's a lot of design runs. Everything's on the edge. And Mike Tomlin's looking around like, hey, Art, where was this when he was here? Come on. And he's like, what the hell's going on? Now, that's my hope as a Jets fan. But my bigger thing, and you're right, their defense is awesome. And the Jets are going to be unproven on offense. We'll see what they have early. So they can still win the game. But, man, their quarterback play, what is it, Kirk Cousins? Is he the backup plan? Because after that, what do they have?
I mean, they've won with Kenny Pickett before. Right? No. I mean, they went to the playoffs.
Mason Rudolph.
Let's just pull the Jets out of the parlay and throw the Houston Texans in. Okay. Because,
my parlay,
listen, plus 25 in L.A., and you brought up sophomore slumps, right? So as much as it may be on the quarterback, let's not forget that also you got a year's worth of game film on a raw kid. So defensive coordinators get an idea of them, but now it's time for – those sophomore slumps coming into their third season to make their adjustments with readjusted offensive schemes. I like the Houston Texans this year, and I think what they were supposed to do, the expectations, the pressure that was put on them, plus some of the injuries they incurred, I think the Houston Texans are going to be a team to watch. I would take them in opening week at plus 125 at the Rams.
They lost Tank Dell. They lost Stephon Diggs. Those are big losses. I know they tried to, you know, recoup a little bit in the draft, but My big team to watch is Atlanta Falcons. I think they win the NFC South going away. I think they win by two games, and I think they're going to win at home. They're underdogs against Tampa week one. I like them to win straight up, and I love Michael Penix Jr.
Okay. There you go.
So Survivor, you just made a pick. Although you probably wouldn't make that as a pick.
I don't like battles. Division battles, yeah. I don't like.
Well, I mean, taking a dog early in the season whom no one may ever take again, and the Falcons is a little bit risky, but man – The field will probably be cleared out like it usually is through 3 weeks. My favorite that week, and how many times are you going to get a chance to take Zona? Because Survivor, you take them once, that's it. They're done for the year. The Saints, I mean, does anyone in the room want to make a case that the Saints are going to be like 7, 8, 9 wins?
Saints and Tennessee are the only two teams without a primetime game, and there's a reason for it, right? I mean, I think the NFL knows that these are two teams. And on to that point, Denver is my pick, right? I think Denver at home, they're, you know, they had what, the second best defense in the NFL last year? They were top five for sure. I can't remember where exactly, but to face Tennessee, whether it's Will Levis or, you know, number one pick, Cam Ward coming into the number one defense. You got Patrick Surtain on one side. They drafted the corner in the first round on the other side. Like, their defense is going to be nasty at home. Like, good luck, Tennessee.
That was my Survivor pick. If we're doing Survivor picks, that's exactly
what I subsidiarily.
Yeah, I think Denver is, because I don't know how many times I'm going to want to take Denver. So I'll use that pick in week one for all the same reasons. And I think Peyton's going to be, you know, fired up to get at home, to get his team, get his offense out there. Bo Nix, I like the Broncos in week one for the Survivor.
Washington Giants, I don't like division matchups, but that's another big spread. Giants scare me a little bit because I think they're going to be sneaky good.
But the game's good in Washington,
right.
I don't want to waste Washington when that's a picky,
same page.
Can I go back? We got less than a minute left. Can I go back to your back and forth there on the Levis Cam Ward?
Yeah.
What are we all thinking here for the opening of the season for the Titans?
I'm thinking you picked them number one overall, and I think that they're going through this summer cultivating and grooming that kid to be the starting quarterback.
What if he blows in August? He just does not look good.
Yeah, that's a problem, right? Then you got to go with Will. You got to have the low expectations. We're, you know, 1-5 on the season. Okay, now we're going to bring him in, and there's no – now you've taken the pressure off of him.
I like Will Levis. I like using him as a good example in that whole Shador argument or discussion where, like, They're like, there's never been a quarterback who dropped in the draft because he was arrogant. I'm like, Will Levis dropped because he came off as a horse's ass. Then he's taking his shirt off and he's all muscled up. And I'm sure some NFL teams are like, what is it? We don't want a bodybuilder at quarterback. Ryan, we appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
There he is, Ryan Hoag. He'll be joining us from time to time. Cofield & Company, 5 o'clock hour on the way.